This reading was taken from Body Image Workbook, second edition, written by Thomas F. Cash, PhD. Chapter 4. Seeing beneath the surface of your private body talk. Are you talking to yourself again? Of course you are. We all talk to ourselves in the privacy of our own minds. This is called an internal dialogue, or mental conversation. Your silent dialogues consist of the thoughts that reflect your perceptions and interpretations of actual or potential events in your life. These mental conversations also include self-statements, thoughts and inferences or conclusions about yourself. Your emotions flow from how you talk to yourself about yourself. Step 3 should have helped you become increasingly attuned to your internal conversations. Your inner discourse often happens without you realizing that you're talking to yourself. These mental processes are so ingrained that they occur automatically. They are not intentional, conscious thought. This habitual automatic pilot mode of thought just happens and in a sense is mindless because you aren't aware of or thinking about your thinking. Among the obvious liabilities of mindlessness is the fact that you don't know your own mind. You don't see the crucial connections between your silent assumptions, thoughts, and interpretations and how you feel and act. Usually you notice only the emotions that these dialogues generate. So you end up having to deal with all these feelings, especially if they are negative and intense. Rarely do you reverse your mental tape and listen closely and objectively to the inner conversations that led you astray, but that's exactly what must be done. The voices within your private body talk. To overcome your body image difficulties, you must first become mindfully aware of your inner conversations, especially those that deal with your physical appearance. I call these internal dialogues your private body talk. Fortunately, you're in training. For a while since you finished Step 3, you've been monitoring and keeping a diary of the ABC sequence of your body image experience, the activators, beliefs, and consequences of those experiences. You've begun to observe and accept your thoughts and feelings as they are, rather than treating them as ultimate truths or something you must avoid. What happens during the B stages will influence your emotional responses to the activating events. It will also affect how you try to defend yourself against your uncomfortable emotions. Of course, B is the part of your mind where your private body takes place, where biased, irrational, and self-defeating conversations occur. Let me illustrate how crucial different styles of private body talk can be. Carrie and Sherry are identical twins. One day they're together in the dressing room at the health club. After working out, both are in a pretty good mood. Before leaving, each looks at herself in the mirror for a few moments. Afterward, Carrie feels bummed and down on herself. Sherry, on the other hand, walks away feeling particularly upbeat and confident about herself. Given that these two women look exactly alike, we must wonder what happened here. What happened was the private body talk that each twin had with herself while looking at herself reflection in the mirror. Carrie's private body talk said, "Oh God, I look so ugly. I absolutely detest the way I look. I'm fat. If I don't lose 10 pounds, nobody will ever be attracted to me. I hate my face. Look at my stupid fleshy cheeks. Everybody who knows me thinks I'm repulsive. No wonder Carrie walked away from the mirror in her private body talk, feeling miserable and wishing she could crawl into a hole and hide." In spite of the fact they are identical twins, Sherry's private body talk was hardly identical. Her private body talk was like this: "Gee, I look kind of nice today. I really like this new lip gloss. It makes me want to smile, which shows my nice teeth. This blue shirt accents the blue in my eyes. I love blue. I'd like to lose a few pounds, but my life won't end if I don't. Besides, my body really feels energized from my workout today, and I feel great." Whose private body talk sounds more like yours? Like Carrie, do you torture yourself with a stream of malicious remarks and dire predictions? How derogatory are the dialogues that you've recorded in your diary? To change your self-demeaning private body talk, you must ask another important question. Why do I do this to myself? Why did I carry on such self-disparaging dialogues in the first place? I'll tell you why. To do that, let's go back to the twins and ask this question. Why did Sherry have an inner conversation that gave her confidence and cheerfulness while Carrie's private body talk had nothing nice to say and made her miserable? You might guess that their parents or peers may have interacted more favorably with Sherry than with her sister. Perhaps some people somehow preferred her and praised her looks more. Maybe it stemmed from when she was 6 years old and their daddy nicknamed her My Little Chipmunk. Maybe she had more bothersome about with teen acne than Sherry did. Maybe Carrie used to have a boyfriend who badgered her to shed weight because he liked the cheerleader look. Maybe. You could go on forever guessing out the differences in the twins' personal histories that forged different private body talk. You'd probably be right in some of your speculations. It's true that the disturbing events can have a lasting effect on your body image and how you think about yourself. I suspect that you wrote some of those personal experiences in the Step 2 of the workbook. Such unfortunate events may have taught you something that fed upon itself and remains with you still. This something derives your negative private body talk and causes your body image distress. Now I'll explain exactly what this is. Something. Now I'll explain exactly what this something is, and I'll tell you what you can do about it. Silent assumptions about your appearance. Whether due to traumatic insults, hey elephant girl, or look at bony boy, family messages, look how pretty your sister is, or your complexion looks terrible, or you're pudgy, need to go on a diet, or cultural socialization, thin is in and feminine, and real men have massive muscles, you've learned certain basic beliefs or assumptions about the meaning of your looks in your life. These core assumptions, which psychologists call schemas, determine how you interpret reality. They operate like templates or guides that influence what you pay attention to, how you think about the events in your life, and how you think about yourself. Your schemas are so much a part of you that you cease being aware of them. They are self-evident truths that you mindlessly take for granted. Like everyone, you have various schemas that guide your thoughts about all the kinds of things such as love and relationships, success and failure, and the meaning of gender or race. You also have assumptions that direct how you think about your own physical characteristics. I call these self-schemas, appearance assumptions. Appearance assumptions are your core beliefs about the relevance and influence of your looks in life. They concern the extent to which you define yourself and your self-worth on the basis of what you look like. You probably never stop to question their accuracy. Most likely, you ignore or reject any possible evidence that your appearance assumptions might be off base. Appearance assumptions are your body image, rulers in both senses of this word. They are the dictators of your private body talk, and they are yardsticks by which you measure your physical acceptability. Take a look at the following diagram, figure 4.1. It shows how appearance assumptions eventually lead to emotions you feel that relate to your experience. From assumptions to emotions. Your appearance assumptions. Focus of attention on your appearance and on appearance-related events. Private body talk. Thoughts and interpretations about these events and your appearance. Emotional body image experiences. In step one of the workbook, one of the self-tests you took, the appearance importance test, provided an index of your appearance assumptions, your investment in your looks for self-worth. Go back to your body image profile and see what your results were for the self-test. If you scored in the riskier problem zones, then step four has plenty of help to offer you. How appearance assumptions dictate your discontent. My computer stores research data from hundreds of people who answered the same body image self-test that you took in step one. I divided these people into two groups. The first group are assumers, those who agreed with most appearance assumptions in the appearance importance test. The second group, doubters, disagreed with most assumptions. I compared assumers and doubters to find out what percentage of each group revealed body image difficulties on the three of the other self-tests. The results in figure 4.2 are quite striking. On each self-test, the vast majority of assumers clearly had more problematic body image experiences than the doubters did. They were much more dissatisfied with most of aspects of their experience. They more often felt body image distress across a range of everyday situations. They experienced a much poorer body image quality of life with more adverse consequences to their social and psychological well-being. Appearance assumption, debtors seldom had a negative body image. They had more positive accepting of view of their appearance, had episodes of body image distress infrequently, and felt that their body image contributed favorably to the quality of their lives. Assumers' private body talk always seems to disrupt the peace of mind, while doubters are more clear-headed about their looks. Step 4 will enable you to become a doubter instead of an assumer. 10. Taxing appearance assumptions. There are numerous appearance assumptions that can influence your body's image experiences. However, let's focus on 10 particular potent beliefs. These are listed in the self-discovery help sheet below. Before reading any further, please complete this help sheet. Self-discovery help sheet, 10 appearance assumptions. Read each statement below and check those that you honestly believe to be true or mostly true. Number 1. Physically attractive people have it all. Number 2. My worth as a person depends on how I look. 3. I should always do whatever I can to look my best. 4. The first thing that people will notice about me is what's wrong with my appearance. 5. If people knew how I really look, they would probably like me less. 6. By managing my physical appearance, I can control my social and emotional life. 7. My appearance is responsible for how much of what has happened to me in my life. 8. If I could look just as I wish, my life would be much happier. 9. My culture's message makes it quite impossible for me to be satisfied with my appearance. 10. The only way I could ever accept my looks would be to change my looks. Conversing with your assumptions, your new inner voice. Self-esteem comes from the ability to experience yourself honestly and accurately. There are two psychological forces that may lead you to play mind games in which you hold a distorted view of yourself and your body image. These forces prevent you from making worthwhile changes. The first is self-deception. Because honest self-awareness can make you uncomfortable with your shortcomings, you may deceive yourself to achieve a false sense of self-acceptance. For example, you may gloss over or deny how demeaning your private body talk is because you'd prefer not to think of yourself as so viciously self-critical. A second force that may lead you to play mind games is based on a need for self-consistency. You've decided that your view of yourself is the absolute truth, so you can only see things that consistently confirm these self-perceptions. However, unflattering. For example, you may have convinced yourself that your nasty inner conversations about your looks are the only valid view that could possibly exist. You insist that you should have a negative body image. If this is so, then obviously your self-deception and your need for self-consistency will interfere with your being able to need to change to be happy with your appearance and yourself. Cognitive therapy can help you develop honest and accepting self-awareness. This approach teaches you how to find, listen to, and nurture that aspect of yourself that I call your new inner voice. This voice speaks in ways that are mindful, understanding, tolerant, fair, realistic, logical, and assured. This new inner voice doesn't care where you are on anybody's scale of physical attractiveness. It cares about and accepts you. It doesn't sound a bit like the it doesn't sound like a bit like the old critical voice. Your upsetting private body talk. Impeaching your long-standing appearance assumption isn't easy. The first words of your new inner voice will simply question the validity and value of your assumptions, purposely challenging their authority over your thoughts and emotions. Each assumption paints a picture, and your new inner voice will ask, "What's wrong with this picture?" Each is an arguable assumption, containing a bit of truth and a lot of falsehood. Tackling the 10 appearance assumptions one at a time will make you more aware of the falsehoods and leave you with a more reasonable mindset. After reading about these assumptions, you will use a help sheet for change to create a new inner voice that speaks to each assumption. Assumption 1. Physically attractive people have it all. Society's preoccupation with and marketing of physical attractiveness reinforces the assumption that being good looking pays bigger benefits than it actually does. The undeniable truth is that being good looking is something advantageous. However, as the French author Stendhal asserted in his famous essay on love in 1822, beauty is only the promise of happiness. Nonetheless, for many reasons, attractiveness doesn't keep most of its promises. There are plenty of reasons why average-looking people or less don't close off opportunities for happiness. To help you challenge appearance assumption one, I want to take a few pages here to explain to you why looks aren't everything. These are not reasons that I made up. They are facts established by scientific research on the psychology of appearance. Fact one. Beauty as beauty does. It's true. Actions do speak more loudly than looks. Friendliness, warmth, intelligence, honesty, a sense of humor, and a social sensitivity are highly valued human traits, regardless of what you look like. Think about people who are important in your life. Are they all perfect? Are they all perfect tens on the appearance scale? I'll bet their looks aren't that crucial to how you feel about them. First impressions don't al Oh, fact two. First impressions don't always last. Our initial reactions to someone's appearance are not frozen forever in our minds. We come to see good people as increasingly good looking. Have you ever met a person whose appearance wasn't so appealing, but as your relationship evolved, that person's looks seemed more and more interesting and attractive? On the other hand, have you ever noticed how the halo of physical attractiveness can fade over time? In 1903, playwright George Bernard Shaw apparently observed, "Beauty is all very well at first sight, but whoever does look at it when it has been in the house 3 days?" Facts 3. Birds of a feather do flock together. We are often attracted to people who are similar to us in certain ways. For example, we seek out those who sh with shared interests, ethnic heritage, religious or political values, and educational background. This is sometimes true of physical appearance as well. Many times, best friends, dates, and mates are comparable in physical attractiveness. This pairing off based on similarity of attractiveness has the fortunate result that nobody gets left out. Fact 4. Beauty can backfire by employing egotism. Appearance assumption ignores the ugly faces of beauty. Paradoxically, the assumed advantages of physical attractiveness can cause disadvantages. If we believe that good-looking people are desirable and reap social benefits, we may also think that they are well aware of their good looks and their privileged status, so we infer that they must be self-absorbed and opportunistic. Then we may assume that they are less responsible or trustworthy as friends, romantic partners, or parents. This negative and false stereotype of attractive people can complicate or cancel the benefits of their looks. Fact 5. Beauty can backfire because of sexism. Another factor that undermines the power of attractiveness is sexism. Pretty women are sometimes presumed to possess feminine personality traits such as passivity and emotionality. Handsome guys are sometimes thought to have masculine characteristics such as dominant personality and a low emotional IQ. Although these stereotypes are untrue, such exist biases about physical attractiveness erode some of its positive power. Fact 6. Beauty breeds envy and jealousy. The 18th century historian Edward Gibbon once said, "Beauty is an outward gift which is seldom despised, except by those to whom it has been refused." Have you ever heard anyone exclaim, "They're so good looking or thin or well built, I hate them"? When we compare ourselves to people who have the looks we idealize, we usually end up feeling worse about our own appearance, and then we dislike these good-looking people for making us feel unattractive. My own research has concluded that people who are highly invested in being physically attractive are more likely to distrust and disparage good-looking people of their own sex. Fact 7. Beauty can transform people into sex objects. In a well-known popular song, Rod Stewart posed the question, "Do you think I'm sexy?" Although most of us want our romantic partners to find us sexy, few of us enjoy being solely a sex object by everyone we encounter. Good-looking people, especially women, are often subjected to unwelcome sexual comments about their bodies. The remarks are frequently demeaning and harassing. Would you really want to be seen as only a sexy body or a pretty face? Fact 8. Beauty can foster self-doubt. Fact 7 above gives rise to another problem for attractive people. They may think that people are nice to them only because they're attractive. Allow me to explain this by repeating a conversation I once had with my longtime friend, Nancy, who is strikingly lovely. One day I complimented her, telling her how beautiful I thought she was. To my surprise, she became very upset and said, "I thought you liked me for who I am." Now, I'll never be sure that it's not just because of what I happen to look like. Nancy's point poses important questions. Wouldn't you rather know that people like you because you're a splendid person and not merely because you're nice to look at? Wouldn't you rather feel that you deserve a recognition you get? Wouldn't you rather feel that you deserve the recognition you get than have to wonder if someone's being nice to you just because he or she is enchanted with your looks? Fact 9. Beauty is a weak foundation for self-esteem. The more people invest in a beauty bank, the more vulnerable their self-worth becomes. So contrary to appearance assumption, good-looking people don't have it all, if at all, rests on being attractive. Time and life events have altered one's appearance, for better or worse. A foundation for self-worth built on beauty is a shaky foundation indeed. Fact 10. Looks don't matter to everybody. The 19th century poet Robert Southey wrote, "How little do they see what it is, who frame their hasty judgments upon that which seems." We all know nearsighted people who judge others solely on appearances. Fortunately, however, there are many people who aren't swayed by whether we're fat or skinny, dressed to the nines, or wearing our comfy but sloppy clothes. They don't expect us to look perfect. They see us and appreciate us for who we are. We should all try to become more like these terrific appearance-blinded individuals. They make our world a much more just and accepting place. Changing a negative body image requires that you seriously question assumption and keep your looks in perspective. Your new inner voice will remind you that beauty is a mixed bag that contains many false promises. In the absence of a positive body image and a solid self-esteem, good looks aren't much worth much. Relinquishing stereotypes and pursuits of physical perfection will free you to embrace many opportunities for appreciating yourself. Assumption 2. My worth as a person depends on how I look. This important assumption is really at the root of the body image problems of many people. It asserts that your physical appearance is the only or the most crucial aspect of everything that you are. You believe that you're defined by your looks more than by all the assets of your personality, your actions, or your experiences. This belief can lead you to minimize your m many fine qualities that have nothing to do with your looks. It can lead you to spend huge amounts of your time thinking about or worrying about what you see when you look in the mirror, as well as countless hours trying to create or enhance the looks that you deem essential to your self-worth or social worth. This is a dictatorial assumption that you must challenge. How? Mindfully take inventory of all the other aspects of yourself that represent who you are. What are the qualities that you possess that you really are happy about? What are your attributes that people who know you value? For example, are you funny? Are you kind, considerate, and emotionally open to others? Are you a good listener? Are you quite knowledgeable about certain topics? What do you like about yourself? You need to start hearing your new inner voice say, "Instead of what I look like, it's really my caring attitude, infectious sense of humor, devotion to family, competence at my job, conversational skills, ethics and morality, dependability, and so on that reflect my special worth." In other words, you need to begin to recognize that your looks are less important defining you than many other than many other attributes of yours. Assumption 3. I should always do whatever I can to look my best. The words should and always imply that looking your best is your duty and that by not looking your best, you have failed. Ask yourself the following questions about this assumption. First of all, why have you saddled yourself with this obligation? What do you expect will happen if you can look your best on all occasions? What happens if you can't? Looking your best is extremely subjective, so how will you feel when, how will you know you perform your duty? Who can possibly look his or her best all the time? Because we can always imagine ways we might look better. This assumption sets you up for a failure by requiring the impossible. Do you require other people to have the best imaginable appearance of all times? Would you be so harshly judgmental if a friend wore less than a perfect flattering clothing, had a hair out of place, or got a zit? I hope not. Nor do I hope that you would tolerate such a demanding expectation from a friend. So why should you demand this of yourself? It's nice to feel that you look nice. It's not nice to feel that you always have to. Your new inner voice will speak out against perfectionism. I enjoy liking how I look, but I could loosen up some. I don't have to look perfect all the time. When I look less than my best, nobody ever commands me to look better. Nobody but me. I'm the one pressuring myself. I'm the one giving myself grief. I need to do whatever I can to accept my looks. It's okay to look acceptable rather than look exceptional. Try this indirect test. Ask yourself how often you stop liking someone upon discovering some imperfection in his or her appearance. How often have you said or thought something like, I don't know that Matthew had an abdomectomy scar. I'll be sure to avoid him from now on. Or now I've seen Sharon without her makeup on, I have no more use for her. Or Becky's breasts are smaller than I first thought they were, so that's the end of our relationship. In step 6, I'll help you come out of hiding and test this assumption directly. Once we test the assumption, we typically find that we have been mistaken all along. People accept us, flaws and all, and that feels much better and so much more real than hiding your new inner voice. Your new inner voice will help you keep matters in perspective. You are the one who is uncomfortable with your physical feature. It's your own shame, not somebody else's judgment. If people knew how you really look, their opinion would not, in fact, change. Everyone would be more accepting of you than you are. Your new inner voice will coax you out of hiding. Listen to it. It will say something like, I worry that I'd be rejected and hurt if people knew how I really look. That if they saw what I don't look like about my body, they'd be revolted and I'd feel bad. But all my worrying makes me feel bad. Would I really feel that much worse if I stopped concealing what I look like? Is it possible that I'm making this into a bigger issue than it really is? Assumption 6. By managing my physical appearance, I can control my social and emotional life. You have tremendous control over your looks. Consider all the available tools for managing your appearance. Clothes, cosmetics, jewelry, hairstyling, and hair coloring. A healthy diet, regular exercise, and sensible skincare. Good grooming can certainly enhance your looks and make you feel attractive. The hazard, however, comes from relying excessively on these tools and believing that they are necessities instead of necessities. In arguing with assumption 6, you must start to see that you can not effectively manage your self-esteem in your life by asking your parents to do all the work. Just as the carpenter cannot construct a house with only a hammer, you cannot build a happy life using only your looks. Appearance management works only if it improves your body image. Stylish clothes are useless if you don't like how you look in them. Moreover, as you saw for assumption 5, if all the clothes do cover its parts of your body, then you just if all the clothes do is cover parts of your body that you dislike, they aren't helping your body image. Depending on clothing for damage control only reinforces your belief that you are an unadorned body is objectable. Review your own experience for evidence that contradicts assumption 6. If all your appearance managing efforts to control your social and emotional life are so effective, then why do you still have a negative body image? We can reword assumption 6 and make it truer. For example, by changing my body image, I can better control my social and emotional life. What will your new inner voice say to help you modify this faulty assumption? It will say, spending too much effort trying to fix my looks is a misdirected effort. And straight repairs on my appearance are only a temporary band-aid. I'm still unhappy with my looks. I want to feel better permanently. So I need to focus on changing my mind instead of my looks. That's a change that will give me more control over my life. Assumption 7. My appearance is responsible for much of what has happened to me in life. Yes, your appearance has affected some things in your life. At times it's paid off, and at times it was a detriment. Nevertheless, most things that have happened in your life had absolutely nothing to do with your looks. Most were either the product of your personality, intelligence, decisions, and actions, or were simply the result of a chance or another person's action. History demonstrates that attractiveness is not a prerequisite for success in most endeavors or of life, other than certain media performance or modeling roles. Abraham Lincoln, Winston Churchill, Michael Gorbachev, Henry Kissinger, and former New York mayors Ed Koch and Rudy Giuliani wouldn't exactly qualify as handsome hunks. Golda Meir, Eleanor Roosevelt, Margaret Thatcher, and Mother Teresa would be unlikely winners of a beauty contest. What widely respected leaders from the world history, the arts, or literature can you think of who were not, in your opinion, good looking? Of course, you chose your heroes or heroines only from movies or other parts of the media culture based on their physical attractiveness. You are not selecting fairly. Most people we personally know who have meaningfully touched other lives aren't necessarily great looking. Can you think of angels whom you have loved or admired for reasons that had nothing to do with their looks? This is not a rhetorical question. I really want you to think about it. Your new inner voice argues against assumption 7 by realizing and saying, "My appearance may have influenced some things in my life, but ultimately I'm responsible for my life. I can make choices about how I deal with my effects that my looks have. Though my history has already been written, my present and my future are up to me, not to my appearance." Assumption 8. If I could just look just as I wish. Assumption 8. If I could look just as I wish, my life would be much happier. The trouble with assumption 8 is its implication. Unless I can look the way I want, that is taller, thinner, more muscular, less wrinkled, or with a straighter nose, there's no way I can be happy. What makes you unhappy is not your physical appearance. It's your wish that sells you short and robs you of self-acceptance. Challenge this assumption in these ways. Remember this scientifically established truth: physically attractive people are not necessarily happier than less attractive people. Good-looking individuals have their body images wish list too. Good-looking individuals have their body image wish list too. Have you ever had experiences in which more desperately you want something than the less you appreciate what you had? To justify your wishing for the new, you have to berate the old. Your burning desire destroys your ability to enjoy what you have. Wishing magnifies your discontent, which belief can be resolved only by getting what you wish. Your new inner voice puts you in touch with reality. It reminds you that your goal is to achieve a better body image, not to have a different body. Listen to your new inner voice say, "I realize that my appearance doesn't really prevent me from being happy. I do know this. I make myself unhappy to trying to look like my idealized image. I cause myself despair by beating myself up for my wishes not coming true. Once I learn to accept my looks for my life will be much happier. That's up to me, not my body." Assumption 9. My culture's messages make it impossible for me to be satisfied with my appearance. With this assumption, you make yourself into a victim. Poor me. So you come to feel powerless. Then what's the use in trying to change your negative body image? Okay, it's certainly true that the cultural media convey powerful and unhelpful messages and images about your physical appearance. They try to convince you that there are only two ways you can be happy and succeed in life. Either you must be born with good looks, or you must buy all products and services needed to manufacture physical perfection. Let's take a closer look at assumption 9. Genius isn't required to recognize how extreme and distorted these images are. If they were all controlling, no one would have a positive body image, and some people do like their looks despite these unhelpful forces. That's because they know that the personal fulfillment does not require physical perfection. Do you know that in certain that what is certain to be much worse than not being a perfect 10? It's worrying about not being a perfect 10. The media and the huge appearance industry certainly make it difficult to accept your body image, but difficult isn't the same as impossible. They are indeed a brainwashing force to be reckoned with, but they are not aiming a loaded gun at you and commanding you to believe and do everything we say or else. What you believe and what you do is entirely up to you. Think about it. So what do you do? A character in the movie Network proclaimed the media's injustice by yelling from a rooftop to the passive public below, "I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore." You don't have to take it anymore either. Should you trash your television and cease reading magazines or watching music videos? Should you boycott all appearance altering products and services? Probably not. Our society could certainly use improvements, but the best place to start is with yourself, your own private body type. does not have to echo the media's appearance preoccupied voices. You don't have to be a victim. Body accepting individuals have learned how to see these calls or messages as distorted and irrelevant and tune them out. Your inner new voice will be assertive and will empower you not to take it anymore. It will say, I'm tired of expecting myself to look like all these perfect bodies in the media. Seeing them isn't believing them. I'm not them and I don't have to look like them. I'm going to work hard to accept myself. The media don't make it impossible for me to accept my looks. I do. Assumption 10. The only way I could ever accept my looks would be to change my looks. This one is very self-defeating. It drives people to try just about anything to alter or correct their appearance. My new clients often want me to help them lose weight or refer to cosmetic surgeon. They believe that only then would they have a positive body image. When I suggest that we should first work on our body image and then decide about our weight loss or surgery, they look at me with disappointment and disbelief. They think I don't understand what they need so they can be happy. I understand the basis and power of appearance, assumption 10. If something is broken, fix it. So you go on a diet again, work out a lot, buy new clothes, get a different hairstyle, use an expensive wrinkle product, or have a cosmetic surgery. Maybe you've done some of these things and some even felt pretty good for a while. But if all the fixes still haven't repaired how you feel about your looks, ask yourself the obvious question. What's really broken? What's not working in your body what's not working here in your body image, and that's what needs fixing. Research described earlier in this workbook confirms that you can improve your body image without altering your body. Here's the correct version of assumption 10. The only way I could ever like my looks would be to change my body image. Tackle assumption 10 head on. Your new inner voice urges you to shift your emphasis, saying to yourself, I've spent too much of my life trying to change my looks. What I need to do is focus on the real problem and real solution. Fixing my appearance feels good at the moment, but it doesn't last. I just keep looking for more ways to be better looking. The best way that I can like my body is to work directly on my body image. That's really the problem I need to fix. Your new inner voice speaks out. Establishing a reasonable doubt of faulty appearance assumption requires more than a casual commitment to stop thinking those things. Change comes only from actively doing something to create a new attitude. A new inner voice will create a new attitude. This strong voice will speak realistically about your appearance, in language that enables you to take responsibility for how you think and feel, no matter what you look like. It is a voice of tolerance and reason. A new inner voice will understand that your body image affects the quality of your life more than your body image appearance does. Cultivating your own new inner voice is crucial to developing a more favorably body image. It's okay that right now this voice may be only a whisper in your mind. You can give it to the word it needs to speak more clearly and forcefully, and when you can listen to it and hear it. Here's how. The following 10 help sheets for change. Arguing with my appearance assumptions will help you develop and nurture your new inner voice. Use your own words to talk to yourself about each arguable assumption listed. Read over the arguments against each assumption that I've discussed above. Think hard about other possible arguments. Don't expect to believe anything you write. Write down what you want to believe, what sounds healthier, more rational, and more accepting of yourself. On the help sheet for each appearance assumption, begin by 1. Noting how the assumption influences what you pay attention to, and 2. What automatic thoughts run through your mind, and then 3. How do you feel? Finally, write out your arguments against each appearance assumption, even those you didn't check earlier in your self-discovery help sheet, as statements you find true or mostly true. After putting your words into writing, read them out loud to yourself. Next, try to find ways to express your new inner voice to other people, including those you knew who know about and support your efforts to develop a more positive body image. If we can convey these new desired beliefs, the beliefs are more likely to become our own. At first, your new inner voice may seem foreign to you, like somebody else talking. That's okay. That's understandable. Each day, take a few minutes to read your words aloud. Soon this voice will begin to sound familiar and the wisdom of your new inner voice will become self-evident. Take the time to complete the help sheets provided on the paper copy of this reading as a self-reflective activity. Final words of encouragement. A lot of people decide to change something in their lives, something that they know they really need to change. Maybe it's their job or a relationship or where they live or a bad habit. They've even told their friends or loved ones that they need to make a change. They know what they want to be happier and they see the direction they need to take. They start on a new path, take the right steps. They're actually getting there. At a point in the about this point in the road, they wish they had already reached their destination. Are we there yet? Impatience during a transition from a bad place to a good place is a normal human reaction. We've all felt this way. It just means we really want to be in a better place, and that's good. Just be mindful of your experience of impatience. You need to not judge yourself or this program because of this feeling. Accept that your progress may not be as rapid as you wish it'd be. Use your impatience to be where you want to be. Step 5 is coming up, and it will offer even more opportunities to strengthen your new inner voice. When you reach the end of this workbook, you'll be fluent in this language and you will have reached your destination. This concludes this chapter of reading.